All right, there we go. All right, so this is Rochelle Wilhite with Best Choice Realty. We're going to be going over contract clauses and addenda today. We're specifically going to be covering 22A, 22D, and 35, very basic addenda that we use in a lot of contracts. And I get a lot of questions about some of the clauses and which box to check, and I do see a lot of mistakes that are made as well. So what I'd like to do is just start with the 22A, since that usually takes up a bunch of the time, and then we'll move on to 22D as well. So if you're driving, you know, we are going to record this call, and if you have questions after the call, you can certainly email me if it's specific around a contract that you're working on. That email address is Rochelle, R-A-C-H-E-L-L-E, at bestchoicerealtywa.com. And I can take questions after the call on specific things like that. Okay. All right, as you're pulling up 22D, one quick reminder is that you can always go to Express Forms on the Northwest MLS. Go to the actual form number, and there is a manual on the right-hand side. They have made some changes to the 22A and the 22D and the purchase and sale agreement. Those changes, luckily for us, were not disastrous, meaning there wasn't a lot of huge changes that take, you know, our normal day-to-day practices changes our world. The biggest change that we had with the latest revisions was they put in information about a five-day walkthrough prior to closing. Instead of having that be in the 22D, they've placed that clause in the regular purchase and sale agreement. Rather, you know, whether you're working on a condominium or you're working on a residential purchase and sale or even a multifamily, there is a clause on the last page of the purchase and sale agreement that has language that the seller has to allow the buyer to conduct a walkthrough prior to closing. So I am getting a lot of questions about that. And I would advise as your broker that if you have a purchase and sale agreement and you have a buyer who's purchasing, and I don't care if it's cash or if it's financed or if it's any type of sale, that you should advise your client to exercise their right in the purchase and sale agreement to actually walk through the property prior to closing. There has been times where I've, you know, with logistically, it just may have not have been possible. And all those times that I've thought, oh, you know, it's okay. The buyer will just be okay with whatever the seller leaves the house, however the seller leaves the house, and we close escrow, and all of a sudden I have more problems than I need to deal with after the close of escrow. So it's not meant to be a reinspection. It's not set up that way in the purchase and sale agreement. It is just to walk through the property to make sure that the, you know, the appliances work, that the property is in the same condition as when the buyer initially viewed it, in that type of way. And that would be the time where if there was a garage door that was banged in or if there was a ton of possessions in the property that wasn't expected, that would be the time to have a conversation with the listing agent if you're representing the buyer. So they did move that. They used to be in the 22D. It's now in the purchase and sale agreement. So make sure you're drawn to that when you're looking at the contract. All right, so I've got my 22A open. And when you have the 22A opened, you'll have something to fill in. There are several items to fill in. And a lot of brokers, new brokers, they fail to fill in the important part. So term one is the part that must be filled in. And it's how much are they putting down and how long are they going to make application. So in term one, it talks about making application with a lender, and they have to do that within a period, if not filled in, 5 days, and how much money they're putting down. When you're filling in the per down amount or the amount, if it's a dollar amount, of how much the client's putting down, this is the time when you want to have a conversation with the lender and with the buyer, and you want to talk about where the down payment is coming from. You want to be very clear that you're writing the contract in the correct way, because we have lost earnest money before in the past, because our buyer's agent hasn't done a good job of talking with the buyer about where that down payment is coming from. And then you, as the person that's filling in the form, is held accountable in a way, for how you fill in that purchase and sale agreement and what you put in that section in section one. Now, if the buyer lies to you and says, oh, yeah, I'm going to be putting 10% down, and they don't have 10% down. In fact, the 10% down payment is coming from a gift. The entire amount is coming from a gift. Then, in essence, you're writing something down that is, in fact, a lie or is dishonest, and we are only as good as what we ask our clients and what we write on the contract. So be sure you're asking that question, where is the down payment coming from? If it's not, in their bank account, then we may want to also check the box where it says other and indicate where the money is coming from, or include a 22EF and source where the down payment is coming from. That's a form that you can use to source the down payment funds. So, ask them where it's coming from, if it's 10% down, if it's $5,000 they're putting down, if it's 3.5% down, at least put the minimum. Sometimes some people have goofed up and they put the maximum, and, say, for example, it's a conventional loan, well, 20% down actually looks better to a seller, but a 5% down is maybe all that they have money, and then they're going to get the rest of it from a gift. But again, let's properly state how much the client is putting down, even if it's the minimum amount. You have to indicate that in Section 1. Now, a lot of people forget in 22A that if they didn't make application and within that 5-day period of time and they changed lenders or they didn't make application, then in essence, if you read it, it says, in essence, the financing contingency is waived. So be sure that you have provided a pre-approval letter with the bank or the institution or lender that the buyer is using within that 5-day period of time. If the buyer says, Rochelle, I've changed my mind. I actually want to go with, instead of Wells Fargo, I want to use Bank of America. And again, I'm just using these as examples. If they do that within the 5-day period of time, what I would do is provide the listing agent with a new pre-approval letter just saying that my client has opted during the 5-day make application period to go with a different lender. And here is attached the new pre-approval letter. If they've done that in the 5-day period of time, they do not need the seller's approval to change lenders. However, if they decide to change lenders after the application period has been made, they must get the seller's approval to change lenders. Otherwise, they have waived their financing contingency. Very important to note. The other part that's important to note is if they change the loan type. So if they change, say that they got the seller's mutual acceptance, you guys checked the box, they wanted to do a conventional loan and they got the acceptance from the seller to do a conventional loan and put 5% down, but then they talked with the lender and the lender told them they talked with the lender. The lender decided to advise them to go with an FHA loan rather than a conventional loan. In that particular case, if you pass the 5-day period of time, and actually any timeline at that matter, then you have waived your financing contingency by switching loan types, conventional FHA, needing a down payment assistance program, not needing a down payment assistance program, going to USDA rather than going with FHA. Anytime you make a change to the loan type, that is also considered a change of loan, and that would be a waiver unless you get the seller's consent. And that would be at any point during the transaction. So be sure you're aware of those points where your earnest money is at risk or your buyers are at risk of losing their earnest money if they have those instances that occur. So if those instances don't occur, then the 22A is actually in the buyer's best interest and to include the 22A contingency and have a financing contingency that lasts for the duration of the escrow. That's where a lot of people forget, is that they realize that they have a 22A contingency. They're wondering why their offers are not getting accepted by the seller who's also getting an offer that's a cash offer or that does not have a financing contingency. And they're wondering why they're not getting their offers accepted. It could be as simple as that they have this contingency that lasts the life of an escrow. Meaning if you look at the terms and you look at the term where it talks about earnest money being at risk, it says that unless otherwise waived, by the buyer, the earnest money is protected, and this is what it's saying, it's in my own language, but that the contingency lasts the life of the escrow. So if I had a contingency that lasted the life of the escrow, and I had not been given a notice by the seller in term two asks for, there are some contingencies that are, if not filled in, you know, sellers can give you notice that they would like you to provide more information about status updates of your loan, and that you have to provide them with that in a certain period of time. If not filled in, there's like 5 days and 10 days. And then in term three and four, it talks about the financing contingency. If not filled in, it would be 30 days. Well, most escrows last longer than 30 days. In fact, some of them are going into 45 days and sometimes 50 days. If an appraiser is taking a long time. So again, these are reasons why you may want to go with a cash offer rather than going with a financed offer. However, if the buyer is using a lender and they've already had it underwritten and things are moving along with their pre-approval before they even start shopping for a home, then you should be able to cut those timelines down. Or at some point in time, have the buyer waive the financing contingency so that it makes the seller feel comfortable moving forward with the financed buyer. So in the terminology, it talks about 30 days. So what would have to happen if you represented the seller and you wanted to execute the seller's rights to terminate the contract? You would have to send over, after the period of 30 days, you would have to send over a notice. And you represent a seller, you should always do that. And that keeps the buyer and the lender honest, meaning that they're going to fulfill the contract. If not, and they ask for extension, and ask for another extension, and they ask for another extension, the contract is going to keep getting extended, and there's no skin in the game. They could walk away at any point in time if you do not have them waive their financing contingency. Again, because of the clause in the 22A that says the financing contingency lasts the life of the escrow. That has never been... will never be removed unless you have waived, unless the buyer has, in essence, been given the notice to waive their financing contingency and therefore waived, or waived their financing contingency altogether. And there is a notice to do that, or they just decide not to include a 22A and write up a purchase and sale agreement without a financing contingency, which is not advised, especially if you're getting financing. Or you're wanting to have an appraisal done on the property, which is most of the time, I don't know of one lender that wouldn't lend without doing an appraisal on the property. So you'll want to include some sort of contingency, whether it be an appraisal contingency in the contract if you're getting financing, or you include the 22A and you list out. But you can cut the timelines down. It's very rarely, in fact, I would say 1%, 1 to 5% chance that the seller would ask you to remove your financing contingency. So if you're going to be involved in a multiple offer situation, I'd advise that your buyer cut those timelines down, you know, on the financing contingency removal where the seller would have to give you notice. You could cut that down to 15 days or 21 days and hopefully get your buyer the property. I've had some agents where their client's already underwritten, it's just subject to an appraisal, and they're that confident in that contingency where they might even just write a 10 or a 15-day financing contingency to allow time for the appraiser to, you know, obviously be ordered upon mutual acceptance and then the appraiser to go out to the property within 10 days. So, again, you can play around with those timelines, but just realize that there are a few instances where your earnest money would be at risk, and that would be if your buyer changes their mind and the lender, their buyer changes their financing type without the seller's approval, or they don't make application within that 5-day period of time. That, in essence, would be automatic waiver. And when we have to deal with earnest money being in risk or jeopardy, the deal doesn't close, that's the number one thing that I look for is when did they make application, was a letter of loan denial provided, when was that lender notified, was there any changes to the financing type. So be careful on that. Now on 22D, when you're looking at 22D, a lot of mistakes are made on the 22D with the check boxes, and I catch it every week when I review the files. When you're filling out the 22D, and the reason why you always use the 22D is for term number 1 and term number 2. Those term numbers are the most important term numbers on 22D because, in essence, if there's a square footage discrepancy or there is a lot size discrepancy, I don't want to be held accountable at Best Choice Realty, and I don't want your license or your anything to jeopardize your what you've told the client or what has been said or communicated either by email or on the MLS sheets that would be, in essence, declaring something that has to do with the square footage. There has been losses that have been done in Washington and other states that, in essence, because there was no 22D, somebody sued down the road and licenses were lost and monies were having to be paid out for attorney fees because of not having that declaration or, in essence, you know, a harmless statement that was a hold harmless statement that was written into the 22D. Additional protection for you, for me, and for your buyer or seller so that they're held accountable for properly disclosing square footage or what they know about square footage. So always check box number 1, even if that's the only box on 22D that's included in the purchase and sale agreement when you write it up. Want to have number 1 as part of the contract, and also part number 2. Number 2 clearly states that the seller will provide an ALTA policy. We want the ALTA policy. ALTA policy is the best policy to cover our buyers when we're writing up a purchase and sale agreement. If we do not check the box, we're going to get the best policy. So that's where I see a lot of people making mistakes. They check the standard box thinking that that's the best policy, and in essence, that is not the best policy. That's an actual less than satisfactory or less than the ALTA policy in terms of coverage. So we do want the ALTA policy, so we just, in essence, use the 22D. We get the coverage, do not check the standard box, unless the only time you would check the standard box is if you're dealing with a short sale, a foreclosure, or you were dealing with a builder. Those would be times where you would not need to get the ALTA policy. The standard policy would, in essence, most of the builder contract, foreclosure contracts, and short sale contracts I see come through have language that stipulates to the fact that you're not getting an ALTA policy, you're getting a standard policy. And then if you wanted to get an ALTA policy, that would be at the buyer's cost. So let's go ahead and ask for those policies by including the 22D. Just don't downgrade the plan on us when we're negotiating, because it's harder to go back and ask the seller to pay additional monies for an ALTA policy when it's already been agreed upon in the contract. It's already built into the contract by not checking the box. So box number 1 and box number 2 are checked. I also like 22D because it also has protection or additional clauses when it comes to personal property, and also, you know, the debris and making sure that the property is clean and that the items that are agreed upon are there on the property. There's exclusions. So if there was like a chandelier or something that the seller wanted to keep, that would be the place to place that and exclude it from the contract. And also on 22D, they do allow you to write on term 10 additional clauses. And also be careful here. I have caught other agents at Best Choice Realty writing language into 22D section 10 in the other section that would prevent them from getting the deal. So we're not trying to make this difficult for the seller to go with our offer. And sometimes you think you're doing the right thing by writing additional language that might make sense to you or to your buyer, but in essence, it's creating more confusion when a listing agent looks at your offer and compares it to another offer. So if you have to write something in there and you're in a multiple offer situation, you can send me a quick text message or send me an email of what you're thinking about writing, and I can give you kind of the other side of how the seller would interpret that. And you may think otherwise of including that in the term 10 because it might prevent you from getting the offer. And we've had that happen a couple times in the last 30 days from agents writing up offers that didn't get accepted because the seller or the listing agent was confused by what was written into the 22G. So always ask me if you're going to write something that's unusual or you think, I don't know if this could be taken a different way, or quite simply, if you just want a second opinion on what you're writing in the 22D. Things that you would write in the 22D would be, if you're representing yourself, buyer is a licensed real estate agent in the state of Washington. If you have relationships to the buyer, buyer is related to the selling broker, would be appropriate to write in that section. You can write, I've seen this happen, and I don't think it's not going to hold up, but it does make the seller feel good. Buyer is doing an inspection for informational purposes only. I've seen people write that into a purchase and sale agreement. But again, that can be interpreted differently. So be careful when you write these things up. Buyer is taking the home as is. I saw somebody write that into a 22D. Again, that could be you're practicing law when you write that. As is doesn't mean anything to an attorney. They have other languages they use to properly communicate a waiver or inspecting the property. And again, don't write buyers taking the home as is. There is ways to write in an inspection contingency that ultimately is waived and has better protection for you, the agent, who has properly advised your client about the need to get an inspection, but the buyer has chosen not to get an inspection. So I'd rather not see you write that into the 22D. I'd rather see you use a Form 35 and waive on the second page if your buyer has chosen not to do an inspection. Okay? So as we kind of go into let me back up a little bit. On 22A, when you have the option to check the will or will not box with the appraisal contingency, always leave the default. Many buyer's agents have asked me that same question, and we want, as long as the appraisal contingency is in place and the financing contingency is in place, not waived, what that means is it's going to be in the best interest of the buyer to negotiate if the appraisal comes in less than the sales price. So leave the default the way it is. Don't check the other box. If you've been instructed to do so by your other broker, I can plainly tell you you are misinformed or ill-advised. Always, if you're representing the buyer, always opt for the option to have that the box checked. If unchecked, the default is in the best interest of the buyer. Okay? If you have questions about that, it's a long discussion. It would probably take 30 minutes just to discuss that section about the appraisal contingencies and why they wrote it the way they did into the contract. Just remember to leave the box unchecked, and that would be the default, which would be the best interest of the buyer. All right, let's move on to the inspection contingency before I run out of time. I'm going to cover the inspection contingency next week more in detail with the 35R and how we incorporate that and some good tips to use on the 35R. But as far as the Form 35 inspection contingency, number one, if you are going to do an inspection contingency and you are in a multiple offer situation and for some reason you're not up against very many people, maybe you're only up against another offer who also is doing an inspection contingency, you may want to just cut that timeline way down. Most inspectors can get out to the property. If you called around, there will be somebody in our inspector roster or inspector list that could go out to the property next day or 2 days. So remember that anytime you write an inspection contingency and less than 5 days or less, it does not include the weekends. So if you're in a multiple offer situation or if you're just in a fast-moving marketplace like we are, it doesn't hurt to cut that timeline down. It helps to expedite and keep the buyer engaged with the purchase and sale agreement, not allowing for buyers to change their minds. So from a sales perspective, it's also smart to cut those timelines down if you can get away with it with your buyer, by letting them know that there's plenty of inspectors out there that we've worked with that can go out to the property at a moment's notice and that you can provide them with a list of inspectors. Also, don't forget to use the 41D if you're advising them on inspectors. Make sure that they are okay with that and signed off on the 41D. But if you're going to cut the timeline down, that may make it will allow for the buyer to have an inspection during that timeline. So let's just say I cut the timeline down to 5 days, and we got mutual acceptance today, which would be Monday. In essence, I actually have more time because my timeline does not start until tomorrow. So I have 5 days to get an inspector out to the property and do a formal inspection report for my buyer. So not counting today because I got mutual acceptance today, 5 days does not include the weekend. So Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Monday at 9 p.m. is when I would have to have my inspection 35R over to the listing agent and the listing firm. So I, in essence, I have actually, it looks good for negotiation purposes, but it's also, it gives us a little more time. So knowing that that's my timeline, if you go to the next term where it breaks it down, 1A, 1B, 1C, 1D, that's the period of time you have to negotiate. So once you send over the 35R and you ask for the repairs, the seller has then 3 days of not filled in to get back to you on your repair request or your proposal on what you're wanting the seller to do. If they agree to all of the things that you have asked them to do, then the inspection contingency is waived and you proceed to closing. If they decide to debate you or go back to you and say, I'll only do X, Y, and Z, then you have the ability, and per the contract in Form 35, that's what the 1C says, or 1D, you have the ability to negotiate back with the seller, and you can, in essence, say you have 3 days to respond. Yes, we're going to go ahead and agree to your response and move towards closing, or no, we're going to go ahead and back out, terminate our contract, or we're going to go ahead and propose additional, you know, an addendum. What happens sometimes is you guys think, oh, well, you know, we have an addendum out. Well, the seller hasn't, if the buyer signs an addendum, a Form 34, and we have not, and our timeline passes, meaning our timeline of 3 days passes, you, in essence, have waived. You don't have the ability to negotiate. And a lot of listing agents that are savvy, that have been in the business a long time, will take advantage of the weaker agents that are out there that have not been in the business very long, and will, in essence, make you force your hand and just say, okay, well, we'll just wait till the timeline runs out. And in essence, you waived your rights to negotiate. And you have to take the home as is at that point in time. So be very cautious and careful on how you approach the seller. If you want to negotiate and you're not happy with their response of the repair request, just be sure you have not, you know, waived your rights. Your timelines are in line. If you want to talk with me about that, call me immediately so that I can help you in negotiating the best situation for your buyer. But if you're out of contract or you've passed those contingency periods, there's not a lot I can do to help you except to call the listing agent and beg and plead and see what we can work out as far as negotiate something after the fact. But we're negotiating from a point of weakness at that point in time if you pass your timeline. So time is of the essence. I say once you get mutual acceptance, I'm on the phone with the inspector to make sure we've lined up the inspection company that's going to handle the inspection. I meet the client at the inspection to do the inspection report. I send over the inspection report, make sure that that inspector can get me the report as soon as practically possible, and make sure I do not pass my deadlines. In fact, the sooner I can get that over to this seller, the sooner I can start negotiating on the repairs that need to be done with the property. And then get the response back so we know if this is the property for them or not. So don't wait till the very last minute on inspections. Make sure that you get started on the inspection negotiations. There are certain things that you can do with pre-inspections. In essence, you know, a lot of you are having to write up where you're doing a pre-inspection before negotiating. That would be the box that you would check if you've done a pre-inspection, is check on page 2, the pre-inspection. Some of you have not understood the neighborhood review. If you are waiving your inspection contingency, but you've included a neighborhood review contingency, in essence, the buyer can back out for any reason within 3 days. That neighborhood review is deadly at times if used improperly, or it can be a way that you can back out or protect your license if, for example, you're selling a property and it's on a busy road or it's in a crime area that you're kind of nervous about. You may want to go ahead and include a Form 35, ask for the inspection contingency of 5 days, and also check the neighborhood review clause. But just realize that if you waive your inspection contingency but then also have a neighborhood review, in essence, you might as well just go ahead and ask for a 3-day inspection contingency as well, because they run simultaneously, meaning that the neighborhood review begins upon mutual acceptance and so does the inspection contingency. So, you know, you got to think about that, how you structure the offer or what your client's needs are before you move forward and decide to advise them on, you know, I'm going to advise you, you know, you need to make sure you've checked out the neighborhood, you've knocked on the doors, that you're okay, you know, moving forward and waiving the inspection. I've advised you to get an inspection, but you're choosing on that last page to waive it. Make sure you've also discussed, you know, the advantages of talking with the neighbors, making sure the property is situated correctly for this particular client, and you don't get yourself into a situation where you've ill-advised them. But just realize you have those choices on page 2 of the Form 35. I've covered the 22A tonight and 22D briefly, and the basics of some of the common mistakes that have been made that I've seen, and things to keep in mind when it comes to timelines and responses. If at any point in time when the financing contingency, you're not able to get financing and you made application and you didn't waive your rights, then you would send over to the listing agent I usually would send over a letter of loan denial from the lender, and a notice, 90I, saying that you're unable to obtain financing, and send that to the listing firm and to the listing agent. I also want to see a copy of it. And then you would be entitled to your earnest money to be returned. Form 50 or Form 51 would, in essence, get your earnest money returned to you. So it has to be done proper. And so if you have done it, you have never done, you know, got out of the contract because of financing in the past, be sure you talk to me and I'll help you and make sure we communicate properly what needs to be communicated to the listing agent. On Form 35R, that's the inspection response, that is in essence how we would communicate whether we would want to terminate the contract based on inspection contingency. But there also is a neighborhood review notice that you could back out based on that. And also there is a form to back out if you have not been given, and you have to be given, not just, you know, it has to be delivered, or you have to, in essence, receipt the Form 17. We have had some situations where listing agents have not delivered the Form 17, and there was not a Form 17 in the file, and the buyer has the right to terminate the contract if they have not been given, or there's not been a receipt for receiving the Form 17 disclosure. So there has been some times where we've been able to back out using that clause as well. Again, we're not looking to back out. We're looking to get as many deals as possible for you guys, but it's important to understand the forms. So if at any point in time you have a question about, you know, what would this do or what would that do, should I include this, should I not include that, you know, certainly give me a quick phone call or send me a quick text, and I can get you that quick information that you need. Have a great night tonight, you guys. Enjoy the week. Drive safe out there. There's a lot of traffic, and we'll talk to you next Monday.